friends, and welcome once again to Poker in the Ears, episode 301. I am Uncle Daddy Joe Stapleton. He is my work wife, James Hardigan.
Happy World Vermouth Day, Joe. And on that subject, I celebrated my birthday on Saturday night with a Vespa Martini, shaken, not stirred.
Happy birthday. Wait, so when I wished you happy birthday last week, was I accurate or not?
You were accurate, but obviously I had to wait a while to celebrate properly because we had a live show at the Hippodrome, which I think we're going to reflect on in this podcast.
That's right. Coming up on today's show, this ain't no victory lap. I mean, it is, but we have got a banger of a show coming at you for episode 301. Yes, we will be recapping the magical night that was Pite 300. Yes, we will be recapping the poker tournament that followed thereafter. Yes, we will be recapping the star-studded cash game that followed thereafter. But also, in addition to the victory lap, we have got another superstar guest for you people today, my babies. Actor, writer, playwriter, Patrick Marber is going to be on the show today.
Very excited for this
one. I'm usually the one that's fawning over the guest, but this guy's extra special for you, isn't he?
Yeah, not only is he a great writer, but he was also one of the cast of The Day to Day, which was my favorite comedy show of all time. It's more than 30 years old now. And Patrick played many characters on the show, including a hapless reporter called Peter O'Hanrahan, who would screw up every single assignment. At one point, he was told that he was lying in a news grave. What's written on the headstone, Peter? News! Famously pretended he'd spoken to the German finance minister when he hadn't, and of course thought that the General Motors plant could function on minus 35,000 workers. So yes, I'm very much looking forward to speaking to one of my heroes today.
I actually know those bits very well. They're hilarious, and I noticed you left one out, and I'll say a credit to how funny this guy and his team was is that they also did managed to do a hilarious 9/11 bit. I know that's
I know
it's something that some people don't think those words go together. It's pretty fucking funny. As a guy who walked around with tears in his eyes for a year after that, the bit that they did about it is pretty goddamn funny. Okay, now, what else we got?
We did not have a super fan on episode 300, but normal service resumes this week.
All right, it's Jude Arrowsmith. And we're doing general knowledge of science. Okay. Does Jude have a science background? Otherwise, I think I might have a fighting chance.
I'm guessing if someone picks science as their specialist subject, they probably know a fair bit about science.
God, I hope I don't embarrass myself. All right, let's get straight to it. Let's recap what went down at the Hippodrome last Wednesday.
Last Wednesday? It's more than a week ago already?
Dude, it feels like... Look, it was a night to remember, and the night turned into basically a morning. But it feels like I haven't had a chance to catch my breath since then. I know that you're somewhere else in the world already. I'm somewhere else in the world already. It's just... I'm glad that we're finally getting a chance to reminisce right now, because I don't think we have.
Not at all. The first thing to say is thank you to everyone who helped bring the show to life, and thanks to everyone who came. And I appreciate that we'll have some people who had one experience of this show, which is they were there at the Hippodrome, and a lot more people whose only experience will be listening to the show. And thank you to everyone who did post on Discord. And as ever, there's a link to the PokerStars Discord server in the podcast description to say that they enjoyed the audio version, because I'm never sure how these stage shows are going to translate into radio. I think this one played. I think this one worked in no small part to Vicky.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did listen back to some bits of this show, which I don't normally do. And I thought it worked. And I thought that having the audience there as like a sort of third character when you and I were up there alone, I like that. I like it as every once in a while to do something in front of a live audience. It adds a nice little dynamic to it. Now, we weren't necessarily super confident heading in to this actual live taping, though, were we, James?
There is a saying in show business, it'll be all right on the night, which alludes to the fact that in the run-up to any live show, it's always a shit show. The rehearsals were Not great. Just going through it, blocking stuff, trying to get the tech working, patching in the Zoom call because Jake Johnson was joining us via Zoom, just blocking how things were going to work on stage, what seats we were going to use. A lot of this was last-minute decision-making and resizing some of the stuff that was on the screens. And as a consequence, we were right down to the wire. We were still kind of signing off on stuff and just rehearsing stuff about an hour before the show started. So, and again, woe is us. There wasn't really a break, and there wasn't really a chance to de-stress and kind of center ourselves
before
the actual show. It was a very stressful hour leading up to the show starting. And I think part of that was also starting to hear about the lines that were forming, that people couldn't get into the tournament even though they'd shown up on time, and just trying to get everyone into the room and whether we were going to have to start late. I had one drink. I figured that a double G&T might help. It didn't. But once the show started, once we walked into that room, once we stood on stage, I'd like to think, and again, it's very difficult to be objective about this, things did go according to plan, that people did enjoy themselves.
Yeah, I think they sure did. And I don't know if you noticed this or not during the show, and the people who only listen to it won't have seen this, only the ones who are there, is that I stood up a whole bunch of times during the show for one reason or another, to welcome a guest, to hit a point home. There was one time we had to redo something, and I sort of coached the audience into how to not fuck us on the second take. But every time I stood up, all my notes would go flying on the floor. And then there was 14 pages of them, and they would get all mixed up and jumbled. And then I'd spend like the next minute and a half rearranging them, and then I'd stand up and do it again. I did this four different times throughout the course of the show. It was freaking embarrassing. Also, something that you won't see, it's kind of like the Kennedy-Nixon debates, in that if you listen to the audio, I probably sound normal. I was drenched in sweat. Absolutely
you
drenched in
sweat. You were schwitzing like a bastard.
I begged them to get it as cold as possible in that room before we went on stage. Whether it was attempted or just not possible, I don't know. But yeah, and luckily, Lisa gave us some gifts. A fan dropped some gifts on the table before the show started, and one of them was a towel. So I ruined James's gift.
It was a scarf that Lisa bought
a
me.
Scarf.
And yes, it's now, I'm trying to check out the washing instructions or try and find the most delicate cycle it can go on, because I'm not touching that damn thing until it's been washed. Because yeah, it basically became your personal kind of sweat pad over the course of the show. I think everyone's heard the show now, so they know what happened. It happened in order. We did the show in sequence from start to finish. At the very end, and I've already mentioned the fact that I thought Vicky was great, but when we left the room, when we walked off stage, I genuinely did not know how that show had gone. I was so rabbit in the headlights,
really?
Almost more than I was back in 2017 than we did it the first time. When we finished that show in 2017, I knew that went really well. That was really good. With this one, I'm like, was that any good? Was that okay?
What made you,
do you think
what
people
made
liked
you
it?
Less confident this time? And do you think it was less good?
No, I don't. If I'm going to be brutally honest, I do think you did a lot of the carrying. I think you were on excellent form, and I think I may have coasted a little bit on your coattails. Because to go back to what we were saying beforehand, I was very, very stressed before the start of the show, and I don't think I came into it in the right mindset. I needed... Do you remember last time? You won't, so I'll tell you. Back in 2017, you and I left the Hippodrome. We went for a walk in the West End. Mm-hmm. We went and got Froyo, of all mm-hmm. things. But we had that opportunity to come back and approach it fresh with clear heads, and that didn't happen this time around. And I really, really needed that. I am not a natural-born live performer. I said that. I said it on both times we've done one of these shows. And it doesn't come naturally to me.
So, okay, so because you were in a little bit less of a headspace, you were still, your head was kind of spinning even when we were done. You just didn't know how it went.
Yeah, yeah. And it took me a while to kind of, again, I'm not trying to sound melodramatic, but calm down. And I'm glad the show did not run as long as we maybe originally forecast. And there was a little bit of time between the show ending and the tournament starting upstairs where I could just relax a little bit, have another drink, and then take my seat in the shootout tournament that we had up in the gods at the Hippodrome, which was a series of single table tournaments. It was a shootout format, win your table, advance to the final. And Joe, you and I, our guests and some other invited guests were the bounties. Every table had a bounty. Everyone who was in seat five was a bounty. And we did it as a mystery bounty, right? So you knock someone out, you get to draw an envelope. It could be a 2.5K silver power pass that gets you to the Irish Open. It could be a Sunday Million anniversary ticket. But I thought that was a really nice dynamic. And even though, to quote KJ, it was fast and furious, it was a free roll. So I don't think people minded the fact that it was a turbo because there were chances to win prizes right from the very first hand.
Yeah, and I think that that caused a, you know, so you guys heard me call him out. This guy, Neil Gibson, very prolific comic book writer, was there. I said, please come to this thing. We wrote this whole thing about poker. He's never played. He's never been in a casino. So I was like, at least come and sit next to me. So he was sweating my hands and he was like, wow, I can't believe like what a nice community it is. Like these people, when they lose, they smile, they shake your hand, they walk away. And I go, for the most part, people take it pretty well in poker. But this is like a little bit different when it's a free roll and everyone's here for this event. Some people don't take it quite as well. But in general, he's right. People do, for the most part, take their lumps in poker, and it was really cool. And I think the fact that it was a super turbo made you couldn't get very emotional. You couldn't get set on anything, right? Anything was going to happen. The first hand of every level was all interfold, which was a cool little twist to it. It was a nice dynamic. I won that hand at my table. Like I started with ace king suited.
You won the first hand, right? You doubled up.
I had ace king suited on the first hand, and it held against a smaller ace. And then I had the second hand, I had pocket kings. Third hand, I had ace king again. Fourth hand, I had tens. It was pretty sick. And
we've said this before, though. You are the genius. You're the master of running good in inconsequential tournaments.
Correct. Yeah. Like
games
you're
not supposed to win.
I don't want to win a fucking Irish Open package. Okay. No offense. I love the Irish Open, but I'm already going. I don't need it.
Yes. Yes. And you will not be able to play. The one thing I'll say about a shootout format is you obviously only see the players at your table. And I had a really good table, great crowd. Thank you to everyone who I played against. I was sandwiched in between former super fan Andy Gibbons and the CEO of PokerStars. It was Andy Gibbons who took me out and won a bounty, cracking my eights with sixes. I think I lasted less than an orbit. I was perfectly happy with that and happy to watch Joe win his table, advance to the final table. Am I right in saying the only other bounty player who made the FT was Alex O'Brien, right?
That's correct. Alex made the final table. She was sitting next to me. I got to, I like sitting next to the other bounties because I get to brag for them when they won't. So I'll be like, everyone, you should read Alex's book. So we got to shill Alex's book a little bit. We got to, Neil stuck around and got to shill his other comic books a little bit. That was fun. I think I went out seventh, maybe. And it was perfect because, like I said, me winning the thing isn't really necessary. Yeah. But I got to play cards for a little bit longer than most people did, which is always really my goal, is just to stay at the table.
Okay, and before we move on from the tournament, we have to give a big shout out and huge congratulations to former superfan and PokerStars mod, Ed Kilworth. Ed won the tournament, so Ed gets that silver power pass, he gets a bronze power pass, he gets a Sunday Million anniversary ticket, so Ed will not be modding in the foreseeable future, he will be playing.
Hell yeah, can't wait to see Ed Kilworth at the Irish Open.
So then, after the tournament, Joe, KJ very kindly allowed us to play in the private room. We got a 1-2 cash game going, which you referred to earlier on as a star-studded cash game. Don't oversell it. I mean, yes, we had Fintan and Spraggy. Yes, we had Boovy from the club. Yes, we had Nico Leonard. We also had the PokerStars CEO.
What?
And we were at that table as well. It was a fun game. Spraggy did a fair few buy-ins.
Spraggy did, and I got to the point where I was like, I don't know how much money Spraggy makes. I don't know what his win-loss is for the year. I assume he's doing fine, but you know, he did £1,000 in that game. And I was like, hey, you can afford this, right? He's like, yeah, don't. This is just, and I guess not, right? When you're playing 5Ks and you're doing multiple bullets and 1K prelim events, it's probably not a big deal. But that money still means a lot to me. It still means something to me. And speaking of that, I was doing quite well. I was doing quite well until I had to fuck it up and get it all in pre-flop against Luckbox of all Luckboxes, Nico Leonard, who definitely doesn't need the money. who's maybe the richest person at that table, including the PokerStars CEO. And yeah, his unfortunately, my pocket kings were no match for his ace 10. Couldn't do it. Couldn't get him to hold for a profitable day.
I can tell you who the big winner in the game was, though, Joe, and it was not either of us. It was my girlfriend, Michelle, and I know she was the big winner in the game because I had all the cash, which I had to pay into my bank account so I could then send it to her in dollars via PayPal.
Well, congratulations, Michelle.
We were joined later by a couple of other PokerStars suits. We had DC decide he was going to boss the table. After that, the game started to kind of break up. It was getting to like 3 in the morning. Someone had to get the Gatwick Express at that time of day. So at that point, I think we all felt that it was time to go home. And then, of course, there was the, I want to say drama, but there was the hard work that needed to take place to get the actual audio show out to the world. And I have to say, the feedback has been really nice from the people who were there, from the people who listened to the audio show. I really appreciate the support we've received for our 300th episode, Joe.
Yeah, people have been very kind, and no one has too much of sour grapes for not having to have been there. There are a bunch of people, by the way, who didn't get into the poker tournament who I think were there plenty of time. There was just a lot of confusion, and I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry for those folks who didn't get to play the tournament. There was one after party after that, James.
Wow.
Me and Nico and Spraggy went back to the hotel where we were all staying, and this was awesome. Nico's like, Spraggy, give me your phone, and like went through Spraggy's YouTube channel and was just like giving him tips and pointers and this and that. And Spraggy said the next day he actually went. I cannot explain to you guys, if you don't know, how genuinely famous Nico Leonard is. The walk from the casino to our hotel is about, I don't know, 150 yards, 200 yards. And he got noticed twice on the walk and then once by the lobby staff of the hotel when we got there. And they reopened the bar for us because we were with Nico. So this dude is legit.
He is. A lot of subscribers, a lot of views of his videos. And yeah, I thought it was interesting that many of the dealers in clientele at the Hippodrome recognized him as well. But if there's one thing he knows, it's the YouTube. Now, for me, Vicky was the highlight. We'd said that we wanted her to be on the show since day one. It took 9 years. She was as good a guest as I always knew she was going to be. She was a great interview. And interestingly, during that interview, she mentioned the poker game that she and Barney Boatman used to frequent in North London. And among the other players in that game was the comedian, actor, writer, and director Patrick Marber. And this is a guy who was part of the cast of On the Hour, The Day-to-Day, and Knowing Me, Knowing You with Alan Partridge. He also wrote the award-winning play Dealer's Choice, which is based around a poker game in a restaurant. He wrote the award-winning play Closer, which was adapted into the film starring Julia Roberts. And he was nominated for an Oscar for co-writing the screenplay for the movie Notes on a Scandal. His theatrical directing credits include Travesties, Leopoldstadt, and Habeas Corpus. And right now, he is a guest on this podcast. Patrick Marber, welcome.
Thank you very much, James and Joe.
This is so cool. We've been talking about having you on the show. We just had our 300th episode. We've been talking about having you on for probably all 7 years. It's come up here and there.
But nevertheless, you've been talking about it, but it's never happened.
Yes, because what happened, you're like Beetlejuice. So your name got dropped like 3 times in rapid succession by people we have in common. And finally, Rory Jennings, I was like, can you please help us? And he did. Is that it? Is your debt paid with Rory now?
Yeah, that's cool. Rory Jennings used to be a nanny to our children. And we've known Rory since he was about 17. 18, because he used to be an actor, and my wife played his mother in an episode of Doctor Who, and that's how we got to meet Rory. I invited him to join a football game that I run, and I've known him, 25 years or something. And my kids adore him because in a period of profound unemployment, he used to come and look after them for us.
That's incredible. Because when you have two people who both play poker, your naive assumption is it must be a poker connection. But no, it's something much deeper than that.
It's an acting connection and a football connection, and then it became poker. And because, as you know, Rory's a recent convert to poker.
Yes, yes.
And I'm very impressed with how well he's doing. And I never thought he'd have the patience for the game.
He still looks like he's shitting himself every time he sat at a poker table, but that's right. Kind of part of his charm, to be honest. Obviously, you are not a recent convert to poker. You predate the internet. You predate poker on TV.
I go back to black cards in the Wild West and riverboat gambling. You know, I go all the way back.
Yeah. You know, because the poker game in Archway got referenced when we spoke to Vicky. When did that game run, and who was playing in it?
That game, it began in the very early 90s. And the four mainstays of the game were me, Christian Coulson, who went on to become the producer of Slumdog Millionaire and won an Oscar, and the two Boatman brothers, Ross and Barney.
Yeah.
We were the four regulars, and there were other people who came in and out, but fundamentally it was us four, and we played that game, I would say, two or three times a week for about 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
And the money went round in a big circle, but we didn't have a lot of money then. Ross had a bit of money because he was on London's Burning, which is a successful TV show. But me, Chris, and Barney had no money, and we would just play with everything we had. Our markers were good, and it was a tremendous game. And it was a three-the-night game into the morning, maybe go and have lunch, maybe resume the game. It would go on. You could play for 2 or 3 days. It was a fun time.
What kinds of stakes are you playing for 2 or 3 days at a time?
Well, I mean, in the early 90s, you could lose a grand or two in that game, and that was a lot of money.
Yeah,
for us, who were kind of just ex-students, we were all in our 20s. So it was, given the incomes we all had, it was a massive game.
Yeah, and so you were just playing for the love of it then, right? No one was really making their rent or playing professionally. It was just because you loved playing?
Yeah. Yeah, and there was kind of nowhere else to play in London at the time, you know, pre-internet. The only place really you could play was the Victoria Casino on Edgware Road, which had a great little card room run by a legend called Jeff. I don't know if he's still around.
Yes, I know Jeff. I remember Jeff very well.
Yeah, and you could play. There was a club in St. John's Wood that you could play in that I never went to. I was loyal to the Vic, but we only all knew about the Vic even because we were disciples of Tony Holden's Big Deal. And in passing in Big Deal, he mentioned that there was this place where you could play poker. So we all piled in there hoping to meet Tony Holden. And we did. And we all became friends with Tony, rest in peace. And years later, Tony started another game. After the Tuesday night game that we all still play. So that was part of his legacy, started a game, and we play that now. But we've just reformed the Archway game as well. Just
nice.
By pure coincidence.
I'm going to pitch you a new player for that game at the end of this interview, another friend we have in common. I'm not sure if you know we have in common yet, but what stage of your career were you at, your like writing, acting career, while this was going on? Like, is this where Dealer's Choice maybe came from?
Yes, definitely. The irony of Dealer's Choice is that the player in the game who can't play in the fictional game of Dealer's Choice was kind of based on Barney Boatman.
Oh!
It's amazing.
Wow.
And the character's called Muggsy. And Barney was... It wasn't that he won or lost any more than anyone else did, but he played like a lunatic in the early 90s. He was He'd play any hand, take any risk, had no discernible discipline. I'm sure he would say now it was all strategy. But
that's amazing.
Barney the Mug became the best player of all of us is a very pleasing irony. I mean, there's another player in the fictional play, Dealer's Choice, who's a poker professional.
Yes.
And that's what Barney's become. But to go from being the mug to the pro is an incredible journey. I hope you don't mind me saying this. And I love him dearly, and I'm so happy for his poker success. But Ross was clearly the best player back in those days.
So I was lucky enough to see the revival of Dealer's Choice, Patrick, when Ross Boatman was in the cast, along with Roger Lloyd Pack and Malcolm Sinclair.
Right.
I do not understand how this play has not been turned into a film or a TV adaptation. When you consider, especially in the mid-2000s, poker was so hot and there were so many bad poker stories being put on screen. Were there ever any conversations? Did anyone ever talk to you about it?
Well, what happened was, back in the 90s when the play came out, a friend of mine who was a film producer said, why don't you turn it into a movie? I said, great, give me the money. And they paid me a lump, and I couldn't write it. I didn't know how to. I couldn't be bothered. I gave the money back. And I've had various approaches since, and I'd be happy for someone to do it. But it has to be, the right people. It has to be the right combination of writer and director for you to think, oh, this is worth selling at this point. It's still a play that gets done all over the world. I've had a good ride with it. Next year, there's a theatre in London that's going to give it its 30th anniversary production.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm very excited about it. So it's coming back next year.
Oh, brilliant.
It's sort of, I don't know, there's something about your first play is very special to you. It is like a child. And so I'm not averse to someone adapting it for TV or movie, but I'm quite fussy about that.
Do you have, when you think about your dream producers or writer directors that do it, do you have people in mind? You're like, I think that guy could handle it. I think that this young lady could handle it.
Oh, not really. No, I haven't thought of, I've certainly never approached anyone about doing it. But there are brilliant writer directors all over the place who are interested in poker, but they've never approached me. It is, as a movie, I mean, it's all set in one room, really. It's not very, it's an exciting play, but I'm not sure how exciting a film it would be. I think it might work better as TV.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
As far as like a 30th anniversary revival is concerned, do you update your plays to sort of go more with the times?
No, with this one, the director wants to set it in 1995, which is when it first came out, because he argues, I think, correctly, that it's kind of a period piece now.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a play set in the John Major era of Great Britain.
Wow.
The National Lottery had just started when the play opened in February 1995. It's pre-internet. There's a line in the play where a character has a mobile phone and the waiter says to him, it's the poker professional has a mobile. The waiter says to him, oh, I see you've got a mobile phone. Are you in business?
Yeah.
Because it was, just, you know, even in 1995, it's kind of a status symbol.
Absolutely.
And so I think part of the charm of the play is its innocence, in a way, about it was just on the cusp of when the world changed completely and the poker world changed completely.
No, for sure.
They're talking about playing online now. And the games they've gotten, the online tourneys they won, and wanting to get to play poker, which would have been it is the fantasy of one of the characters in the play, but his only way to get to Vegas to play poker is to buy a plane ticket. The idea of you could win your buy-in didn't exist.
The stuff of a madman's dreams. I'm glad it's being done as a period piece, and I'm so glad there's a revival coming up. Of course, your play Closer, you did adapt into a movie directed by Mike Nichols. The thing which I connects both Dealer's Choice and Closer for me, and please take this as a compliment, you have a talent for creating truly awful human beings. And a talent for providing the audience with this glimmer of hope, this glimmer of redemption, and then snatching it away at the last second.
Yes. Well, these were in my pessimistic years, James.
You're right.
Now, there's always a little bit of hope at the end in what I write, because that was how I felt in the 90s. I was in my 30s. Now I'm a man approaching 60. I have a little bit more of a, not necessarily optimism about the way of the world, but I have more love for the world. I've got three children. I've made it into late middle age. I've seen a bit more of the beauty of human existence. I'm less interested in the misery.
Well, I want to stay in the 1990s for a short while because I do want to talk about my favorite radio program slash radio TV slash TV comedy of all time, On the Hour and The Day Today, and the fact that you were part of that cast working with Chris Morris, working with Steve Coogan, and so many great characters that you got to play over the years. Just the Michael Winner alike who shot Alan Partridge on live TV. But there is one character who stands out, and you know who I'm talking about. Peter O'Hanrahan, who has had a ridiculous amount of influence on my poker commentary to the point where still to this day, you have so many situations where players are in a spot where, you know, that they've got a mediocre hand and that the pot odds are right and they just feel compelled to make the call, even though it doesn't seem like a great thing to do, which will make me always trot out the line, doesn't like it, has to go along with it.
Yes. Yes, I thought you said that, or possibly ich nicht und lichten.
Still a line I quote constantly. Such an amazing character, but there were so many great characters, and I can't imagine how much fun it must have been. Because some of those people are on screen for like a few minutes, like the guy developing the fake baby, the kind of plastic kind of like disc thing. But you got to, like, I guess, create those characters and bring them to life.
Well, there were a team of brilliant writers, so we didn't create them all. A lot of the material was generated from improvisation. I mean, the funny thing about the O'Hanrahan stuff was it was shot in the last 10 minutes of the studio time that had been booked to do all the studio material in the show. So there's one O'Hanrahan on location, and there are two from the studio. And I knew it was a great character. And you know, I didn't for a second think people would be quoting him 30 years later. Or more. I did think this is a funny character I'd be given to play. And the clock was ticking. And in the end, we had 5 minutes to record the two sketches. And we had to do them in one take each. So I think the sort of strange, nervous energy of the man and the slightly disquieting kind of wide-eyed horror was all part of the fact that I knew if I didn't get it in the can in one take, it would never be seen. So it was sort of shot under the most terrifying conditions. But of course, Chris Morris is so damn confident and so adept. I didn't know he was going to come out with some German. I didn't know he had it in his locker. And there it was. And they're like, yes. it was a very real situation. The pressure Peter feels is the pressure that Patrick felt.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because it was such interesting acting choices to not play it the way most people would, with like a sort of like, duh, I've been caught, like a cartoonish sort of thing. He just never breaks, and I can see that now. You're like, we got 5 minutes to do this, time to play. That's so interesting.
Because Armando Iannucci, the producer, who I worked with very recently again for the first time, directed a play he wrote about the pandemic. Fantastic guy. And what he had always said to us from the get-go, from On the Hour onwards, he said, if you try and be funny, I will cut it. Don't ever try to gag it up. You're not allowed to play it as if you know it's funny, ever. And so I knew that was the thing he most hated. So I just kept it as straight as I possibly could, did no expressions, kept my voice flat, so that it would survive his razor blade.
The weird thing is, I was a student in the mid-1990s. It was the day-to-day that inspired me to study journalism and go into broadcast news. I know that's weird, but stick with me here. But on journalism courses, they literally play Peter's report about the redundancies at General Motors as an example of what not to do, to check your facts, make sure your numbers are correct, and to make sure that your notes are in a good order and don't have a spider web in the corner.
Yeah. I can see that that would be a useful set of tips.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. At the end of the 90s, you got to play poker on TV with Tony Holden, who you referenced earlier on, and Vicky. This is something that Vicky talked about on the podcast that we did at the Hippodrome, the late night poker celebrity special. You were part of the lineup of that with Ricky Gervais, Martin Amis, Stephen Fry. Am I right in thinking this is the only time you've played poker on TV? I'm surprised you haven't been wheeled out more often to take part in TV shows.
I love that. Wheeled. I'm not in a yet.
We haven't seen you stand up. We can't take any chances.
I've sort of avoided being more famous than I could be. I've never popped up on a funny show since I became a playwright. I just sort of don't feel comfortable doing that. I did Vicky's quiz show once, a charity special of, remind me what it's called, it's brilliant.
Only Connect.
Yes, I did one of those because she asked me and she's a pal. And I did that late night poker because it was Tony and Martin and it was Al Alvarez as well.
Yes.
Poker legend. And I'd read all his books and I loved Al. And Stephen Fry and Vicky. So it was such a lovely bunch of people to be in a room with that I just thought, well, I can't say no to that. But that is the only time I've done it. Listen, the truth is I'm not a very good poker player at all. In fact, I would say I'm a bad poker player who occasionally gets lucky enough that his lack of skill doesn't shine through. And so there's no point in me popping up playing poker on TV because I'm not going to win.
I guess we can't run those hands past Patrick. We're about to the strategy situations. We should probably cut that segment of the show.
Yeah. But in all seriousness, Patrick, you're describing 70 to 80% of poker players. It's a game that everyone likes to say they're really good at, but the reality is most people will be losing players in the long term, are hugely reliant on luck to help them.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any problem with admitting that. And one thing I would say, it didn't stop anyone else from milking the poker boom for all it was worth during the mid-2000s.
No. A lot of people bummed a good ride on the boom. I wasn't one of them. I mean, what I do remember is when Paradise Poker started up. I remember it happening. My memory is it was still on dial-up internet. And I remember playing it and thinking, this is the future. This is amazing. I should get involved with this. I should get together with some smart techie people and, we could be in the Caribbean by this time next year. But no, I didn't. It's like vaping. I knew that was going to be big. Someone sent me a prototype early kind of vape cigarette. In the early days of vaping, they were simulating a cigarette. They hadn't come up with the idea that maybe people would like something that doesn't look like a cigarette.
Yes.
And so it was all these sort of fake cigarettes. And I was sent one and I used it on a plane. And I was flying to New York or LA. I said, I can't do without nicotine. And I thought, oh, this is the future. Don't be a schmuck, because this is like that internet poker thing that you was the future. Get in early on the whole vape thing. But I didn't.
But as you said yourself, you kind of moved away from being in front of the camera and you became a writer. And I mean, do you now consider yourself to be a full-time theatre director? Because most of your work for the last 10 years has been like directing other people's material.
Yes, it has. But I'm a writer-director. I still write movies that don't get made or occasionally get made. And I still write things for the theatre or adapt things. So fundamentally, I'm still a writer-director. But I probably at the moment do more directing than writing. But that's out of sheer laziness, that the writing is so exhausting and painful and the directing is pleasurable and communal. So, you know, it's just that circumstance.
I do want to ask a question about your writing. Do you get any money off that Panic at the Disco song?
The Disco song?
There's a band called Panic at the Disco, and they had a song called Lying is the Most Fun a Girl Can Have Without Taking Her Clothes Off.
Never heard of it. Haven't seen a bean.
All right.
I'm writing this down. Panic at the Disco.
I can't believe no one's ever told you this. I mean, it's a direct quote.
Oh, I think that's probably fair game. Panic at the Disco, and what's the song called?
Lying is the Most Fun a Girl Can Have Without Taking Her Clothes Off.
Yeah, I wrote that.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, I panicked for a second. I'm like, do I have the wrong line? I think he wrote this line.
He wrote that line.
Yeah. Yeah. What am I going to do? Pursue people through the courts to earn?
You should get some free tickets at least. I don't know, something, an album. I can't believe. I mean, you should at least have a gold record.
Do they still
on the wall.
Press compact discs? Can you get the double cassette tape version of their greatest hits?
The 8-track is what I want.
Oh wow!
You remember 8-track?
Oh yes.
Yeah, we used to have 8-track on the riverboats. Steaming down the Mississippi.
Right next to your six-shooter.
Oh, it was tremendous. Yeah.
So the last name I wanted to run past you was that a good friend of mine and a good friend of the show, Josh Molina, was recently in one of your plays. And I don't think that he knew what a big poker fan you were, because if he had, he would have tried to get you to play. And I think he might be coming to London this summer to do some stuff. So maybe I can get him into your Archway game. I don't know what it takes.
Yeah, he will. I've become pals with Josh since he did Leopoldstadt on Broadway.
Yeah.
I love the guy. He is a properly good poker player. And I will certainly invite him into the reformed Archway game. He's actually going to do a play that I'm directing. Probably not in the summer, more like the fall.
Okay, great.
But he is a tremendous guy. And I have played poker with him. He got me involved in an online game that he plays in. And a nice bunch of guys. So I did a bit of that in New York.
Well, I've never won a pot off him in my life. So if you do, I'll probably add an extra commission.
Have you played live with Josh or online?
I've played live with Josh. I play online. Josh and I, like, basically before the pandemic started to become home game buddies. And then all through the pandemic, we played 2-3 times a week over Zoom. And now since then, we try to get a game whenever we can. Yeah.
You must have played in the game that I played in. Some guy organized it. It wasn't you. There was a home game that you played online. I can't remember what it was called. But yeah, he goes by the name of Pigeon, right?
That's right. Yeah. No. Pigeon has stacked me many times. Yep.
Yeah, he's good.
Well, Patrick, I'm really thrilled that Dealer's Choice will be back in London next year. We'll definitely see that. And I think, Joe, that will be an opportunity for us to actually do a full-on kind of retrospective analysis and review of that play.
This is good. Maybe I could come back on the show and talk about it and do, like, a second appearance in the 7 years.
If we'd found this connection earlier on, I'd have had you on every single year. It's so weird. It's like kind of when Joe tells me, I've got to connect to Josh Molina. It's like, the West Wing's are my favorite TV shows of all time. Oh, I've got to connect to Patrick Marlborough. And he wrote plays. He was on the day-to-day. So, yes, I get ridiculously overexcited. Yeah. So, yes, we will definitely make this happen again.
Terrific. Thank you, guys.
But thank you so much for your time today. It was awesome to talk to you.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you. I hope to see you on the Bays at some point.
You can count on selling at least two more tickets to the Revival since me and James are going to go.
We'll always need the poker players. They're the only people who understand the band play. Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So awesome to have Patrick Marber as a guest. Definitely going to have him back. Very quickly, Joe, I wanted to discuss what happened on Sunday night. We highlighted it on episode 300 at the Hippodrome that I was going to get to play the Sunday Million for the first time, that I was going to stream it alongside Nick Walsh. We picked the date Sunday the 17th for a variety of reasons. St. Patrick's Day. It was the second week of the Sunday Million season in the run-up to the anniversary on the 7th of April. But also, it helps, especially when you consider the fact that I am not a normie when it comes to poker. That reduced time difference between the East Coast and Europe meant that I could start playing at 5 in the evening and be done by 10 rather than playing until 11 or midnight when, you know, it's past my bedtime.
James, you could have been done at 5:05 p.m. if you really wanted to be.
No, I really wanted to make an effort. I really wanted to put in my best showing. And I really wanted to make the most of my first ever Sunday Million. And I really enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed streaming with Nick. It was a very different vibe, obviously, to any other broadcast we've ever done together. We were both playing the Sunday Million. We were both playing the $11 Super Sunday PKO as well. Nothing really happened in that one. I think we both fired two bullets, crashed out. Both fired a single bullet in the Sunday Million. Sadly, Nick did not cash. I did manage to make it into the money. Didn't get off to the best start. During the first hour, Maria Konnikova dropped in from a cafe in Vegas. You were with us for about 45 minutes on the stream. And I think the problem is, and this is something I will get over, but the novelty of being able to play on PokerStars, the novelty of being able to play online has not worn off yet, and I just want to play hands. And rather than exhibiting patience, and also when you're streaming, you do feel that you need to be showing people something, right? You can't just be sitting there folding. But it meant that I was probably playing too many hands, especially during the early stages of a pretty deep, pretty slow structured MTT. And I needed to start making adjustments, which I think I did once Ali joined the stream, Ali Shaban, and because I needed to make dinner, and I am still advocating, by the way, for there to be a 75-minute dinner break on Sunday night so that all those people who are playing every single Sunday major have a decent break where they can enjoy their meal rather than doing what I had to do, which is rush out to the kitchen, switch the oven on, come back, rush back in, oven's preheated, get the pizza in the oven, rush back, play a few hands, rush back out, take the pizza out the oven, rush back, play my big blind, rush back out, slice
James
the pizza.
James hasn't heard of a laptop. Or a mobile device.
Joe, you can't do that when you're streaming, you dingus. So, yes, managed to navigate food. And Felix, when Felix arrived, and I joked that he was the lucky mascot, when Felix arrived, I was starting to learn stuff. Mostly based off Nick's disappointed facial expressions and sighs. Now, we had this rule, of course, that, you know, there can be no real-time ghosting. But once I've acted, once I've done something, there's no takey backsies. So if I raise and Nick goes, oh, I know I've screwed up. Mostly it was relating to bet sizing, both pre-flop raises, pre-flop three bets, and continuation bets.
He's a size queen, yeah.
Timing tells, I act way too quickly, and not paying attention to stack sizes. It's something I'm pretty good at live, and bizarrely online, where the bloody information's on screen in front of you, I was not adjusting to that. And there was one hand in particular where it was clear it needed to be an open jam rather than a min raise because of my stack size and the stack size of my opponent. And understanding, duh, it's a PKO, bounties are a factor, you have to make adjustments for that. But I did adapt, and both Nick and Felix were very happy to see that. And Felix was there when I took my first bounty and my second bounty a few hands later. And at that point, and I did say, Joe, that this does make me sound like a bit of a fish, but Felix went, no, that's absolutely fine. I think the fact that you can be honest about this is good. Once I'd made like $95 in bounties, I'm like, I'm happy. I'm in this tournament for $109. I'm going to cash out for at least $95. Therefore, I'll have paid $15 for an evening of entertainment. I'm good with that. I'm happy with that. But it got to the point where I realized that the field is dropping really, really quickly. And even though there's still 2,200 players left and only 1,700 odd get paid, if I really start to knit it up, which is not difficult for me, I could potentially make the money. And then it reached the point where I've got a sub 10 big blind stack. I think I was down to 7 bigs, and there's still like 1,900 players left. I'm like, it's not going to happen. I need to find a spot. I need to find an opportunity. And everyone's saying to me, you'll be surprised how quickly this goes. And sure enough, inside of 5 minutes, we were down from 1,900 players to being hand for hand. And when we hit hand for hand, I had 5.96 big blinds. And on hand for hand, a multitude of players went broke. So we were in the money. I managed to min cash, which was worth $90 plus 95 in bounties. Very happy to have a 100% record in the Sunday Million, which I'd like to maintain. But at the same time, I am tempted to play the anniversary on Sunday, the 7th of April. And maybe, just maybe, if we're not streaming them, maybe a couple of scoop tournaments as well, because I've never played a scoop. I never played the scoop phase tournament and had to cross the border into Canada like my bearded colleague. So now that scoop has been announced, the dates are out there, by the way, 5th of May to the 29th of May, I'm thinking that maybe I should play a couple of scoop tournaments as well.
Will you travel to play scoop?
No, I will stay in London. I will understand the ramifications of playing a multi-day tournament when I'm due to travel to somewhere in the world where I can't play on PokerStars. But just to pick up on what I was saying about scoop, guys, right now we just know the dates. I think the full tournament schedule will be announced next month. And with that will come our streaming schedule as well. So more on scoop to come very, very soon.
I can't play scoop, but I guess I can settle for Superfan versus Stapes.
Which leads to the inevitable question, who are you going to get to play Superfan versus Stapes with, Joe? And the answer is Jude Arrowsmith. Hello, Jude.
Hello, how are we doing?
Dude looks like a lady. Sorry, had to do it.
Oh no, I get that way too much.
Yeah, I know, I had to.
I mean, you're screwed. It's either an Aerosmith gag or people go, hey, Jude.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's a lot of Aerosmith.
Oh, what a fucking mashup. A Steven Tyler, hey, Jude mashup. Amazing.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, honestly, it gets me.
So, tell us about yourself, Jude. What do we need to know?
And I'm a first year chemistry student at the University of Bath.
Fuck.
I told you, no one is picking science as their subject who is not a scientist.
Fucking fuck. Yeah.
Well, I've played a few pub quizzes and I'm very useless when it comes to music or films or sports. So it's the only subject that I had any chance, really.
All right. And so, okay. So, and what is the eventual goal with this degree?
I get asked that a lot. Being in my first year, I still have a lot of time and a lot of things to go over. But my main goal at the moment was to get into the pharmaceutical side of chemistry. So that's my broad goal. But, I mean, who knows where it's going to go.
Don't let Big Pharma get their claws into you, Jude. Stay on the good side.
I'm sure I will.
Well,
and what about poker? How's poker played into your life?
Poker's been good. I mean, I've played poker now for about 3 years. I began when I saw some online influencers playing a charity game, and I was fascinated by the game they were playing, and I, you know, at the time I had no idea what they're doing, so I began to learn how to play poker, and I started having a lot of fun playing online, and I found it a game where I just liked being competitive and wanted to get better, very much like when I first started playing chess. And then I came to uni for the first time and we got a big society where we play a tournament each week, about 200 people come each week. And that was my first time ever playing live poker. And it was very different where, you know, you're talking with the people, you see the people there in front of you. It's very sociable. And I made a lot of friends playing poker. So it's had that social aspect of my life as well.
Fantastic.
Cool. That's what we like. That's what we like to hear. That's all of us. You are us.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to join.
Well, we're going to give you the opportunity to win a $109 bronze power pass and some PokerStars merch. We have got 6 rounds, I believe, to play here. So slightly different format this week. So each round is themed, and there are 2 questions in
covalent
each round.
Covalent bonds. So, sorry, I'm just getting ready.
So basically, round one is about biology. And the only choice, the only question I'm going to ask you to start with, Jude, is whether you want the odd question or the even question.
I'll go with the odd question.
Okay, which is the first question. Where can one find the smallest bone in the human body?
Okay, I think I know this one.
Okay, you can go for it for 2 points, or you can take the multiple choice options for 1 point.
I think I'm gonna go for it. I'm pretty sure I'm confident. I'm not 100%, about 90%. Is it in the ear?
It is in the ear, and you get the full 2 points. So, Joe, you get the even question, question two.
Yes, I know, but you guys know what bone it is, right?
In the ear?
Yeah, do you know what it's called? I should get all the fucking points for this.
Isn't it called like a drum?
It's called the stapes.
Wow.
Is that true?
That is true. The smallest bone in the human body is called stapes.
That is ridiculous.
And it's in your ear. And it's poker in your ears. Come on. Let's go.
Okay. Including wisdom teeth, how many teeth should an adult human have, Joe?
Fuck!
Had you taken the multiple choice options, I think you would have been all right because there was nothing near 32. Round two is chemistry. I'm basically going to say, Jude, you're not allowed to take the multiple choice options, whether you take three or four.
Okay.
Odd or even?
I'm going to even this time.
Okay. Name the only metal that is a liquid at room temperature.
Yeah, mercury.
You get the 2 points. Joe, what's the name of the compound with the chemical symbol NaCl?
Sodium chloride.
A.K.A.?
Truth serum.
No. You not being funny, you get the 2 points for sodium chloride, but the answer is salt.
Salt, my bad. Okay, I'm running okay. I would have gotten both of Jude's questions. Yeah. All right, here we go. Next category.
I love to put some truth serum on my fish and chips. Physics is round number three. Jude, odd or even?
Even.
Even. What is defined as the upward force that water exerts on objects?
Is it cohesion?
No, it's not. And I'm not going to give you a mulligan because you are a science expert. The answer was buoyancy. Joe, you can tie the game if you can get this question right without taking the options. What is defined as the ability of substance to return to its shape after being deformed?
Resiliency.
No, it's elasticity. So no score on round three. And we come to round four, which is astronomy. Odd or even?
Odd.
Odd. Hyperion is a moon of which planet?
Okay, I do not know the answer to this. I'm going to have to guess.
Is it Saturn, Jupiter, Earth, or Uranus?
I'm going to go for Jupiter.
It's Saturn. So, Joe, again, if you can get this question right without taking the options, you tie the game. How many stars make up Orion's belt?
I don't know.
Options?
I'll take the options, I guess.
3, 6, 9, or 12.
These constellations always have far fewer stars in them to be the thing that you think that they're going to be. I'm going to go with 6.
It was even fewer than that. 3.
Fuck.
Still 4-2 as we go into round 5. Oh, it's the penultimate round. Geology is the subject of round 5. Odd or even, Jude?
Odd again.
Also known as Fire of the Desert, what is the national gemstone of Australia?
I have no clue.
Would you like the multiple choice options?
Yeah, I'll
you
take multiple choice.
Is it diamond, ruby, opal, or emerald?
I'm going to guess ruby is red.
The fire of the desert is opal, so you're still on 4 points. Joe, another opportunity here. What is the name of the dark, igneous rock that forms when lava cools very quickly?
When lava cools very quickly. I think I'll know it when I hear it.
Is it andesite, flint, basalt, or obsidian?
Andesite.
It's obsidian. And here's a hashtag fun fact. I found myself in the Obsidian League on Duolingo for about the last 12 weeks.
Wow,
the final round
rag.
Is botany. Jude, odd or even?
Even.
What is the name of the male reproductive organ in plants?
I'm going to have the multiple choice.
God okay. Damn, I'm running so bad in this game.
Is it the carpal, the calyx, the stigma, or the stamen?
Oh, I think it's either the stigma or stamen, but I'm going to go for stigma.
It was the stamen. So, Joe, you get another opportunity here. Another opportunity. What is the name of a tree that sheds its leaves during autumn / fall or during dry spells? What type of tree is that?
It's not coniferous. I'll take the choices.
Don't take the choices. You cannot tie the game if you take the choices.
All right, I'm going to have to say a deciduous tree.
You got it. You got the 2 points and you take us to the tiebreaker. Woo! So, it comes down to the tiebreaker, which has a numerical answer. So, Jude, you have the option of answering the question or forcing Joe to answer and then you taking the over or the under. So, the tiebreak question is, on average, how many bones does a shark have in its body? Do you want to answer or do you want Joe to answer?
I want to answer.
Go for it.
I think I know the answer to it.
Go for it.
Is it zero?
It is zero. They have powerful cartilage instead. So on the tiebreaker, this is the second time you've had a super fan. Now the tiebreak question, spot on. On that question, you do win. You do get the 109 bronze power pass. You get the PokerStars merch. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was very close. I was getting a bit nervous when I had a lot of, you know, opportunity to get even or get ahead.
Jude, I think you might not have any bones because you are the real shark here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for volunteering to come on the show. Thank you for being part of the podcast.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun.
All right, my babies. That's just about all the time we've got for this week's show. Coming up next time, we will be at the Irish Open.
Yeah, so here's the weird thing. I am in Toronto for all of 24 hours. I fly back via Dublin. I fly from Dublin home to London for the weekend and then back to Dublin on Monday. Ugh. So, yeah, it's all been a bit of a whirlwind, to be honest. But very excited to do, I guess not an Irish Open preview because we did that as part of episode 300. This will be an event update because we'll have probably played some poker on the Monday or Tuesday. We're going to be about to stream the main event. And here's the exciting thing, because we'll be set up in the room surrounded by poker players, we should be able to find at least one, if not two, guests to talk to.
Just grab them and pull them in kind of deal. I mean, that's how I got my chops in the first place, was literally just grabbing people.
Yes. Yes, I think this is going to be a little bit of a rudimentary show. Might be a shorter show, to be honest with you. But do you know what? You've had some pretty substantial broadcasts in recent weeks. So if we decide to turn in an episode that's just shy of an hour, don't hate us.
All right. And remember to stay in touch with us on the Discord. You can get involved in the conversation. And we're looking for super fans still.
Always looking for super fans. And a reminder that if you... You don't have to have a specialist subject, by the way. We can pick it for you, or you can choose to do just general knowledge. If there's a particular movie or TV show you're a fan of, I think someone talked about the MCU. Yeah, we did that as an umbrella subject, but how many movies are there now in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? If you want to pick a particular Marvel movie or a particular Marvel character, go for it. But crucially, post your interest in that thread. Patrick from our team will send you a DM, so make sure you look out for that direct message on Discord. And if you're not already on Discord, link is in the description. There are two channels for the podcast on the PokerStars Discord server. A general discussion channel where you can talk about anything and everything to do with the show, and the Superfan Applications channel where you can apply to be our next Superfan on Superfan vs. Stapes.
All right, my babies, that is it. That is all the time we have got for episode number 301. Until next time, for James Hartigan, I am Joe Stapleton. Smell you later.